Welcome to Tune to Two Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden era. Mark Levonier, your host for an hour of drama. Later on, Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin star in The Marriage from 1954. But first, an episode of Mr. Ace and Jane, the 12th in the series from CBS, heard on May 1st, 1948.
Broadcasting System, in cooperation with the United States Army and the United States Air Force Recruiting Service, brings you the new Mr. Ace and Jane program, a weekly half-hour comedy series starring radio's original comedy couple, the Aces. Once again, the strains of Manhattan Serenade introduce the story of Mr. Ace and his wife, Jane. Tonight, Chapter 12, entitled Jane Has a Dream About a Racehorse and Makes Everybody She Knows Bet on the Horse, then drags Mr. Ace out to the track to watch her dream horse run. Or, as Mr. Ace puts it,
did you ever see a dream walking? You think the Kentucky Derby was a horse race? Wait till I tell you about this one. Be with you in just a moment.
And now, Mr. Ace, what was that about, a horse race?
Well, I'm sure at some time or other all of you have gotten a tip on a racehorse. Somebody told you he'd walk in. And he does walk in. The only trouble is the other horses ran. I used to be quite a horse player myself, spent night after night working out my system. And then I'd go out to the track the next day only to find out the horses were against the system. Communists. The thing that really cured me, though, was a character I met in front of the $2 window one afternoon.
Hey, Jack.
Yeah?
Are you betting on this race, Jack?
Well, according to my figures here, I'm going to bet on
Figures? Why, hey, look, you ain't one of them corny horse players that think they can figure them. Figures won't get you nothing. That's no good. I got a sure system.
Yeah? What is it?
Come here.
Yeah?
See them horses walking to the post? Well, every once in a while, one of them runs out ahead of the pack for a kind of warm-up, see? Hey, look, there goes one now, number two.
Yeah?
Hey, there goes another one, number six.
Yeah?
Now, you add them together. Two and six is nine, and you bet on number nine.
But two and six is eight.
There you go, figuring again. That ain't no good.
Oh. I played this system the rest of that day. I won $22,800,000. Retired from business, and I am now living lavishly in a 100-room villa in the south of France under the name of Simone Simone. That's what cured me of betting on horses. And I never even thought about them again until the other night when we were sitting around after dinner and Jane was rummaging around looking for something. She couldn't remember whether she had left it in the bureau or in the bookcase or was it at my office.
I can't remember whether I left it in the bureau or in the bookcase or was it Tuesday.
What are you looking for, Jane?
My dream book, How to Interrupt Dreams.
Interpret dreams, you mean?
Yes, six nights in a row, I've dreamed about a horse. He's driving me out of my mind.
That wouldn't take a horse. What about this horse? What kind of a horse is it?
A horse, a quadruplet.
Oh, a quadruplet, I think.
What do you mean, what kind of a horse?
I'm sorry, Jane.
I dream I'm walking out of the house, and there he is standing right in front of the door. The first night, I didn't think anything of it. Hmm. And I started to walk right past him. And he says to me, "Hello, cutie." Of course, I didn't even turn around.
A horse speaks to you and you don't even turn around?
Of course not. I didn't know him. I just thought he was trying to get fresh.
Hmm. A wolf, huh?
Yeah, you know how horses are.
Yes, I know.
So I started to walk faster, and he started to walk faster. So I began to run up to the corner to get on a bus, and he began to run. And I beat him to the corner by a nose.
Mm. And what did you pay to win?
Dear, I'm worried, because the next night I dreamed he was there again. I walk out of the house, and there he stands, as big as a horse.
Mm. What happened this time?
This time he said, "Hello, Jane."
Oh, getting familiar. He certainly got his nerve flirting with a married woman he's never even met, socially, of course.
Exactly what I told him.
I
said, "You've certainly got your nerve flirting with a married woman you've never even met, socially, of course."
Mm-hmm. And then what?
Same thing over again. I ran to the corner and he ran after me.
Mm. How did that heat come out?
I beat him again.
Mm. He was probably carrying too much weight.
Mm. Yes, a 5-pound box of candy he wanted to give me.
I see. Apprentice allowance waived.
The third night, there he was again. And again I run to the corner, and again he runs after me.
Wait a minute, Jane. I'm giving 10-1 on you to win.
No, no, don't do it, dear. This time he beat me.
Cannot win a bet. He beat you? How come?
Well, I'd been ironing all day.
And you were tired, of course.
Mm-hmm. And it was raining so hard.
And you're not a mutter.
No. Dear, I gotta find that dream book. I gotta find out what this dream means, because I'm sure he's trying to tell me something. Doesn't it to you?
Yes. I saw Sally reading a dream book at the office the other day.
She has? Oh, that's where I left it. I'm going to come down and get it tomorrow.
Yes, but I think you better get to bed now, Jane. I want you to be in condition to win that race tonight.
Oh, yes. I guess I better hit the hay.
Yes, you do that. And don't forget to brake fast, take the inside rail, and say hello to Clem McCarthy for me. Happy to report a little woman did the 6 furlongs to the corner bus that night in 1:13 2/5 seconds.
I win easy.
She won it easily. The next morning at breakfast, I gave her a nose bag full of shredded wheat and left for the office. With a big stack of correspondence to be answered, I called in my secretary, Sally Anderson, to take some dictation.
I wonder where my pencil is.
Miss Anderson is Jane's cousin.
Did you see my notebook?
That's how she holds her job.
I think I'll go down and get a malted.
You'll get no malted now. You just got here.
I didn't have time for breakfast, and I can't take dictation on an empty stomach.
Look, why don't we face it? You just can't stomach dictation. You're slow, your punctuation is bad, and you spell terribly.
I what?
Spell.
Oh.
What do you think I said?
Good morning, everybody.
Jane, what are you doing here?
Just fine. Hello, Sally. Oh, hello, Jane. Oh, my, what a pretty hat.
You do? Oh, you've seen this hat before, haven't you?
No, I don't remember it.
Look, Jane, I'm very busy.
Oh, sure you did. I think you went with me when I bought it.
Oh, yes, now I remember.
Miss Anderson, this mail...
Is that a new dress, Sally?
Yes, it is. Do you think it's too long, Jane?
Oh, no, that's not too long. What color shoes do you have on underneath it?
Ladies, please.
Sally, do you know where my dream book is?
Dream book? Mm-hmm. Oh, sure, I've got it right here in the filing cabinet. I'll get it for you.
Thanks.
The dream book she can find. Her notebook she can never find.
Here it is, Jane.
Good. I've got to look up and see what a dream I've been having means. I've dreamed about a horse 7 nights in a row.
Oh, that's easy. You look under horse.
That's brilliant.
Horse. That's under H, isn't it?
I think so.
She thinks so.
There it is, horse.
Oh, yes. Horse walking, happiness. Horse running, trouble. Horse standing still, danger.
What was your horse doing, Jane?
All three. First he stood still, then when I walked, he walked. Then when I ran, he ran.
It's kind of confusing, ain't it?
Yes, ain't it?
Oh, no, it ain't. It means you're in danger of having a lot of happy troubles.
How's that again?
I can't say it again. Look, Jane, I've got a lot of work to do.
Was anything else in the dream, Jane?
Oh, yes, last night something else happened. After I raced into the corner, I was thirsty. So he got me a glass of water, and just when I was about to take it from his paw, the glass dropped and broke.
Oh, well, let's look up glass under G.
Oh, yes, glass. G.
Whatever became of me here?
Here we are. Garden giant goes gloves. No glass.
That's funny. No glass.
Look up sand.
Sand? What's sand got to do with glass?
They make glass out of sand.
Glass out of sand?
Glass out of sand?
Here, please.
Well, it's true. What did you think they make glass out of?
Glass, broken windows, and old bottles.
Where do old bottles come from?
Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola, naturally, of course.
Oh, that reminds I was just going down to get a malted. Would you join me, Jane?
Miss Anderson.
Thank you. Yes, I'd like.
Oh. Now, what else was in the dream, Jane?
Well,
now let me... Isn't this awful? Well, the girls had their malted. Miss Anderson had one with an egg in it. Jane didn't have an egg in hers. She had to drive home. And when she got home, there was her brother Paul waiting for her. This character hasn't worked in 15 years. But when Jane told him her dream, he knew right away what it meant, because Paul is a horseman from way back. The first dollar Paul ever lost was on a horse. But lately, he's been picking a lot of winners.
But lately, I've been picking a lot of winners.
Not having any money, he makes mental bets on paper.
Not having any money, I make mental bets on paper.
And he has made a tremendous paper profit.
But what can a guy do with 40,000 sheets of paper?
He could buy a villa right next to mine in the south of France. As I say, Paul knew right away how to interpret the dream, and he did it without a dream book. He used a racing form, which he happened to have on him at the time.
Fifth, that dream can mean only one thing. Seven is the key number. You have to bet on horse number seven in the seventh race today.
Horse number seven. Now, who's that?
Yeah, I got it right here. Here you are. Number seven. His name is Itching Palm.
Itching Palm. Yes, seven-year itch. There's another seven.
Oh, it's a tip if I ever heard one. Now, we've got to go out to the racetrack today, Jane, and really clean up on this horse.
Oh, the racetrack, yes. Let's go. I'd like to see what my dream horse looks like in the daytime. We'll be partners, huh, Paul?
That's the ticket, Jane. Partners. How much money do you have, sis?
$14.
Oh, there's that number seven again. $7 each.
Yeah, another seven. It's on candy. Oh, well, that must be Ken Roberts. He said he's coming over. I'll let him in.
Hold it just a moment. Jane has gone to the door to let in our next-door neighbor, Ken Roberts. He's the radio announcer. You hear him on the radio all the time. He does commercials like,
ladies, try Tepsic. Remember, Tepsic contains Zippity, without that harmful doodah.
And it does, too.
Tepsic comes in three sizes. The small size for tired eyes if you've been reading too much, the medium size for tired feet if you've been walking too much, and the large size if you've just been sitting around the house.
Okay, that's Ken Roberts, and Jane is explaining the deal to him.
And Paul and I are going out to the track to bet on him. Do you want to come along, Ken?
Well, I don't know, Jane. I've got this commercial to do tonight on a show, and I got to rehearse it.
Oh, but we'll be back in time. Come on, Ken. Come out to the racetrack with us and win a lot of money.
Jane phoned to tell me she was going to the track. I wasn't in my office. I was in the office of my boss, Mr. Norris, and the call was switched there. You'd have to know Mr. Norris and the proverbs he's always spouting to understand why I couldn't talk horses and racetrack in his presence. If he even sees me just sitting around the office not doing anything, he remarks,
"Idle men are the devil's playfellows," I always say.
So I tell him I'm resting.
"To rest is to rust," I always say.
So I mutter something under my breath.
"A man's best friend is his mutter," I always say.
Now you can understand why this following phone conversation with Jane was so one-sided.
"Hello, dear. Is that you?"
Yes, Jane.
"This is Jane."
I'm rather busy right now, Jane.
I know. You're with Mr. Norris, yes. So I won't talk loud. I'll talk right into the mouth organ so he can't hear me.
What did you...
Well, Paul and Ken Roberts and I are going out to the racetrack to bet on my dream horse. We're partners. So is Ken. Ken is not a partner, but he's going. So if you worry about where I am, dear, don't worry. I'll be at the racetrack. I'm wearing my check gray suit.
Hey, Mr. Ace, make that short, please.
Yes, sir. Jane, no.
No what?
No, I don't like it.
Oh, you don't want to talk in front of Mr. Norris?
Yes.
Well, which is it, dear? You don't like me to go to the track, or you don't like the gray check suit? Just nod your head.
Well, I'm busy right now, Jane, but I wouldn't do that if I were you.
The suit or the track?
Yes.
Well, all right. Then I'll wear my tan gabardine. Are you going to bet on him, too, dear?
Goodbye, Jane.
It's going to win, dear. Paul says if this horse loses, he personally will be very surprised.
See you later, Jane.
Well, it's about time, Mr.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Norris. That was Mrs. A. She was asking me about...
The race is not always to the swift, I always say, Mr. Ace.
Oh, you heard what she... Well, she has a hunch on a horse in the seventh race today, Mr. Norris, and her brother is taking her out to the racetrack to bet on it. He says it's a cinch to win, but you know how those cinches are. The horse could get left at the post and lose.
They also serve who only stand and wait, I always say.
But not in a horse race, Mr. Norris. Personally, I don't bet on horses.
Good. A fool and his money are soon parted, I always say.
And that's what I always say, too. But her brother expects to make a cleaning on this horse.
Ill got is ill spent, I always say.
Yes, you do. But you see, she had a dream about a horse, and today she looked him up in the thing there, and her brother talked her into going to the track to bet on it. He seems pretty sure the horse will win, but I don't think so myself. But then on the other hand, yes. Well, I guess I better get back to my office. I want to finish up this work I started here. I might go on over to that client of ours this afternoon. If I get finished in time, let me see. Post time is... I mean, I'll see you later, Mr. Miller. Well, you guessed it. About mid-afternoon, I sneaked out to the racetrack. There was quite a crowd. I didn't know that many people were in the advertising business. I was beginning to wonder how I could find Jane in such a big mob when I heard a voice say to me,
"Hey, Jack, who you betting on this race, Jack?"
"Look, my name is not Jack. My name is Simone Simone, and I'm sick and tired of the South of France." I quickly shook him off and figured out that I might find Jane at the paddock where they saddle the horses. And sure enough, there she was. So were Ken Roberts and that brother of hers. They hadn't spotted me, so I stood off a bit and listened to this choice bit of dialogue.
"There he is, Ken, number 7.
"Yeah, Itching Palm. Do you recognize him from your dream, Jane?"
"Well, he looks kind of different with that caddy sitting up there on him."
"Jockey," said.
"I'll speak to him. Hello. Hello there. Remember me?" Oh, he shook his head, yes. "Itching Palm, I want you to meet my friends. This is my brother, Mr. Sherwood, and this is Mr. Roberts. Boys, I want you to meet Mr. Palm."
"And I'm Mr. Ace, Mr. Palm."
"Here, are you here?"
"No. How do you do, Mr. Palm? Any friend of my wife's is a horse on me."
"Well, brother, never expected to find you out here."
"Well, Paul, I always expect to find you out here."
"Hello, Mr. Ace. You're just in time."
"In time for what?"
"Dear, we're in a quarry."
"Yes?"
"We've been waiting to bet on Itching Palm, but we practiced betting on the other races, and now we haven't got enough money left to bet on him. We wanted to bet $14, but we're a little short."
"How much short, as if I don't know?"
$14.
$14, yes, I thought.
"We were just about to ask Ken if he would lend us."
"You're just in time, Mr. Ace."
"Yes, I see what you meant now. What happened to the other races? I thought Paul could handicap the horses so well."
"Oh, he is, dear. He's a real handicap."
"I know. Yes, he is. Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll bet $20 on the horse, and we'll all be partners. That's $5 apiece."
"Oh, right? That's wonderful, dear."
"Gee, thanks, Mr. Ace."
"Okay. A measly $20 you're going to bet on this horse?"
Look, measly, I happen to work for my money, and $20
is... "But this is a sure thing. This is a chance to make a killing. Don't you want to make a killing?"
"Don't tempt me."
"Dear, people are looking."
"I don't care if they are. I'm not going to bet more than $20 on that broken-down nag."
"Please, dear, Mr. Palm is listening."
"Oh, I'm very sorry, old man. What am I saying? This brother of yours upset me so."
"Dear, look, there's Mr. Norris."
"I don't care who." "Who?"
"Mr. Norris. See him over there?"
"Oh, no. He better not catch me here. I'm going to duck."
"But too late, dear. He already saw
it." "Oh, isn't this awful?"
"Well, hello, Mr. Norris. Long face, no see."
"Mrs. Ace, good afternoon. And Mr. Ace, I suspected I'd find you here."
"Well, you see, Mr. Norris, that client I went to see.
And this is my brother, Mr. Sherwood, Mr. Norris."
How do you do?
"And I got through kind of early. And I, that is, well..."
"This is Mr. Roberts, Mr. Norris."
How do you do?
"And you see, the client was out. And I...
Yes, Mr. Ace, what is it you're saying?"
"What was the question again?"
"The question is, how do you find time to come to a racetrack when you should be working at your desk?"
"Well, I..."
"He came out to bet on my horse."
"Oh, fine."
"Are you so overpaid at our office, Mr. Ace, that you can afford to bet money on horses?"
"Well, no, I don't usually."
"Are you going to bet on him, Mr. Norris?"
"I've already bet $500 on him."
$500?
"Are you so overpaid too, Mr. Norris?"
"Jane, please."
$500. "Now that's what I call a real bet on a good thing like this. There's a man, when he comes to the races, he comes to bet."
"Mr. Sherwood, I came to the races to find Mr. Ace, and so it shouldn't be a total loss, I made a wager on a horse."
"But Mr. Norris, that's too much money. A fool and his money are soon parted, I always say."
"Nothing ventured, nothing gained, I always say." "I expect to win a lot of money on this horse, Mr. Ace."
"Yes, but ill got is ill spent, I always say. How can you bet that much on just a hunch that Jane has?"
"Get a hunch and bet a bunch, I always say."
"That I never heard you say. Never."
Uh-oh. They're going to the post. Now, listen, brother, if you're going to bet on this horse...
Yes, sir, you better hurry. They won't let you bet after the race is over. I found that out.
Oh, you did. Well, yes, I guess I better. Will you excuse me, please, Mr. Norris?
I'll excuse you if the horse wins. Should he lose, you stand to lose something more than just a horse race. So, for your sake, I hope he wins.
The feeling is peri-mutual, I always say. Well, this simple little claiming race I came to bet on turned out to be a stake race. My job was at stake. I made the $20 bet with fear and trepidation. There's a nice parlay. As I turned away from the window, I remembered Mr. Norris's $500 bet, so I decided to shoot the works. I bet the other $2 I had in my pocket. If I lost, I'd walk home, and maybe somebody would be kind enough to run over me. I made my way back to the rail where Jane, Paul, Ken, and Mr. Norris were watching the horses line up. The announcer was on the speaker system.
They're all in there. Steady. And they're off! And number 7 breaks on top. That's Itching Palm. At the corner is Itching Palm in front by a length. Taboo second. Threshold third. Summertime fourth. Lucky Girl fifth. High Card sixth. And Trailblazer, 7.
Gene, he's leading.
Come on, 7.
Oh, I hope he can keep up that pace.
At the half, it's Itching Palm by 2 lengths. Drexel is now 2nd. Summertime, 3rd. Sabu, 4th. Lucky Girl, 5th. High Card, 6th. And Trailblazer is 7.
2 lengths in front now, Gene.
He's running easy, sis.
Come on, Mr. Palm.
Come on, John.
At the 3/4, it's Itching Palm by 3 lengths. Drexel, 2nd. Sabu, 3rd. Lucky Girl, 4th. Summertime, 5th. High Card, 6th. And Trailblazer is still 7.
Look at him go, James.
I don't think I could even beat him today.
Come on, Itching Palm.
Mr. Ace, you'll see me in my office in the morning.
But Mr. Norris, he's in front.
In front of whom?
That's Itching Palm out there in front.
Itching Palm?
Yes, that's
into the stretch, it's Itching Palm by a neck. Drexel, 2nd. Lucky Girl, 3rd. And here comes High Card on the outside, moving up to 4th. And it's going to be... High Card, the winner. Lucky Girl, 2nd. Drexel, 3rd. Summertime, 4th. Sabu, 5th. Trailblazer is 6th. And Itching Palm is 7th.
Oh, isn't that terrible, Jane? He finished 7th.
There's that number 7 again.
Mr. Ace, he won. And he pays 4-1. I've won $2,000.
$2,000? What did you bet on?
The hunch Mrs. Ace had.
What?
High Card. You didn't tell me the horse, but it was easy to figure out. High Card is the ace.
Oh, you thought High Card. Yes, Ace.
Mrs. Ace, thank you very much.
High Card. Mr. Norris, I'm afraid you made a terrible mistake.
Jane, quiet. His horse won.
But he bet on the wrong horse.
Wrong horse?
Jane, please.
I'm awfully sorry, Mr. Norris. Didn't we tell you we were betting on number... Ow! Dear, you stepped right on my foot.
Oh, gee, Jane, I'm awfully sorry. I hope I didn't hurt it because we've got a long walk home. And so I sold my 100-room villa in the south of France. And as our boat sailed away, we waved a fond farewell to the sun as it sank slowly into Jamaica Bay, along with my $22. The next morning at breakfast, Jane started in again.
Well, dear, I dreamed about my horse again last night.
I don't want to hear about it.
I really told him a thing.
I'll bet you did. No, I won't bet either.
I said, how do you expect to win races if you stand around all night on street corners whistling at girls and married women to boot?
I'd like to.
He told me I should never bet on a horse race.
Oh, now he tells you.
He said he wouldn't bet a nickel on the human race.
Oh, now there is a horse with good man sense.
And then he said goodbye. He's never coming back again.
Well, that's good riddance.
He said he's made enough to retire from racing.
From running 7th, he makes money?
Sometimes. He told me all the horses bet each other where they're going to finish in the race.
Oh, I suppose he bet he was going to finish 7th yesterday. How could he tell exactly where he was going to come in?
Well, he's got a system.
A system.
He watches the people that come to his stall before the race. Mm. He said yesterday there were 3. That was Paul, Ken, and me. Then he said 2 more came up. That was Mr. Norris and you, dear. So he adds them together. 3 and 2 are 7, and he bets on...
Oh, I know that system. He's going to do fine.
Well,
yes.
He's already won 22,800,000 bales of hay.
And that ain't money.
So he's retiring. And he's going to live in a 100-room stable on the south coast of France under the name of Whirlaway.
Well, a neighbor of mine.
In just a moment, I'll give you the title of Chapter 13 in the story of Mr. Ace and Jane. I'd like to make a mighty sound suggestion to all the young men in our audience. Fellows, do some serious thinking this weekend about your future. See if an Army or an Air Force job doesn't fill the bill for you. Remember, when you join today's new Army or new Air Force, you're on your way to a great career. You'll be given every chance for advancement. You'll receive good pay, comfortable living quarters, clothes, medical care. You'll have no worries about future security. And you'll be on a team that's a winner every time. Today, the Army and Air Force teams are keeping America strong so that we'll continue to be winners at peace. Next week, Mr. Ace and Jane will bring you Chapter 13, entitled Mr. Ace is assigned to start an advertising campaign for a baby food, and that same day, Jane obligingly finds an abandoned baby on her doorstep. All of which reminds Mr. Ace of the story of...
The story of a newly married couple who were undecided whether to buy a car or have a baby. They finally decided to have the baby because they could get quicker delivery. Good night.
Thank you.
The script for Mr. Ace and Jane is written by Goodman Ace. Original music conducted by Morris Certain. In the supporting cast were Leon Janney as Brother Paul, Benny Rubin as the racetrack character, Eric Dressler as Mr. Norris, Florence Robinson as Sally Anderson, Everett Sloan as the racetrack announcer, and this is Ken Roberts reminding you that you may hear Mr. Ace and Jane next week at this same time over CBS. The Columbia Broadcasting System.
Mr. Ace and Jane, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 1st of May, 1948 on CBS. The voice of Goodman Ace was a familiar one during radio's yesteryear and during TV's golden era. He was one of the more prolific writers for the medium, penning many broadcasts of the Perry Como Show. This is an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for an episode of The Marriage called The Grandfather Clock, an NBC broadcast from January 17, 1954.
Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin in The Marriage. With the conviction that marriage remains the most popular domestic arrangement between friendly people, NBC takes pleasure in presenting one of the most distinguished couples of the American theater, Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin as Liz and Ben Marriott, bringing you the love and laughter of the marriage.
There's a play that you see in summer stock every so often about a kindly old lady who takes a stranger into our house and then just can't get rid of him. He runs her life, holds her prisoner, terrorizes her, and nobody can help her. I think I know now how that lady feels. It started one night for me when my mother dropped in to see us. If I'd known what was coming, I'd have turned out the lights and hidden in the closet. But, of course, I didn't. I gave her tea instead.
You know, Liz, you don't have anything from our old house in Vermont, do you?
No, I guess I don't. More tea, Mother?
Oh, no, thank you. I was telling your Uncle Arnold about it a few weeks ago.
Uncle Arnold? Say, we haven't worried about him in weeks. How is the old boy, anyway?
Very well, considering... He's 2 years younger than I am, you know.
Well, I know now.
He has the comforters, you know. The goose feathers.
Mother, I really don't need anything to help me remember the old house.
Of course, the furniture all went at auction, but I do have a few little things left down at the antique shop.
Oh, really, Mother, you don't have to bother.
No, but it's such a comfort to have something around with memories. Do you remember that lovely little China shepherdess that belonged to Grandmother Walker?
Oh, yes, that was lovely.
I have it on my desk at the shop. It's so delicate. Always reminds me of Grandmother Walker. Besides, it weighs just an ounce, so it's very useful for judging overweight envelopes.
Now, there's a sentimental thought.
Yes, isn't it? I'll send you over something tomorrow, Liz.
Oh, but what?
Oh, I don't know. Don't worry, Ben. Just a little something.
The next day, Ben was home with a cold. By 2 o'clock, we ran out of fruit juice and aspirin, so I went out shopping. When I got back, I found Ben in his robe and slippers in the hall.
I'm glad you're here, dear. A little something arrived for you.
Not that. Ben, what's in that crate?
I'm not sure, but it took 2 truck drivers to bring it in here.
Well, it isn't from Mother.
From the size, it could be Mother.
Oh, maybe it's bone china cups and saucers.
In a 6-foot crate?
Well, Mother always was a careful packer.
Nobody is that careful. Maybe it's Uncle Arnold, wrapped as a gift.
I suppose we'd better open it.
I don't know. I feel a little as though I were breaking and entering.
Oh, Ben, look at it. What do you suppose it is?
Well, let's get the hammer and screwdriver and find out. One more, Dale.
Can you get the cover off now?
I think so. Who is it?
Ben. Oh, Ben, look. It's Grandfather's clock. It used to stand in the corner of the dining room. Oh, Ben, this is wonderful. Mother's a darling. Don't scratch it.
Ooh, it scratched me.
Oh, Ben, isn't it beautiful?
Yes, goes so well with the room, too. There's nothing like gold-painted mahogany and hand-painted cupids to set off modern furniture.
But it's wonderful. Here's the key. I didn't even know Mother had it in the shop.
She probably had it disguised as a telephone booth. No kidding, Liz. Are we really going to keep that thing?
I've always loved this clock. It has the most wonderful chime.
I'll bet. On a clear day, I imagine it can be heard over in Jersey.
Mother was right. Just looking at that clock, I can remember my childhood so much more clearly. Now, listen.
Isn't it a little loud?
All grandfather clocks tick like that. Don't you just love it?
Oh, yes. Sure. Gives the room a nice, warm Edgar Allan Poe feeling.
Wait, Ben. Listen.
At exactly 3:07.
It isn't set yet.
Well, where are you going to put it?
How about in the hall, just outside Emily's room?
Oh, that's fine. We don't really need a bathroom anyway.
It would block the door, wouldn't it?
Well, Pete could squeeze by. We could have him carry buckets of water into the living room.
How about the kitchen?
Liz, darling, it's so crowded in there now that every time you open the refrigerator door, you're back into the oven. Seriously, don't you think that we might call up Abby and thank her nicely and just return it?
Oh, no, I love it.
Maybe we could trade it to Uncle Arnold for the goose feathers.
I know. In front of the television set.
Oh, Pete would kick a hole in it around Roy Rogers' time.
Well, in the meantime, we'll put it next to the couch.
Here we go. 1 o'clock, right on the nose at 3:14.
The clock did have a tendency to split time into awkward segments, although I finally got it adjusted to a more or less regular quarter-hour schedule. Ben was right. It did have a rather loud tick. Our little electric clock in the bedroom just sat there smugly without a sound. The kitchen clock didn't have much to say for itself either, but Grandfather's clock. There was a clock that let you know exactly what was on its mind every minute of the day and night. It was rather comforting having the clock there during the day. The tick-tock followed me round from room to room, and it was always interesting to see what hour the clock would chime. I used to stop carpet sweeping and just stare at the clock and remember the years of life that old face had seen. The hours and days and years of my childhood it had ticked away. Seemed like a sharp-eyed old biographer that had recorded the life of the family. somewhere inside that case was my childhood, and my father's too, and now my children's. The gleaming brass weights and chains had been going up and down, measuring the sorrows, the love, the excitement. It was still measuring excitement.
Mother! Oh. Mom, where are you?
Living room, dear.
Mom, what are you doing?
Counting. 12, 13,
Mom,
14.
Mother, I'm Portia. I'm going to play Portia.
You are?
Not the one who faces life. The Shakespeare Portia.
I didn't know there was any other one.
It's for the spring play. All the girls tried out today. Oh, Mommy, I sang all the way home. I just wanted to tell everybody.
I think that's very exciting.
Exciting? It's excruciating.
Come here, sit down. Tell me all about it.
Well, first all the girls read the speech.
The quality of mercy is not strained.
How did you know?
Oh, I guess.
You should have heard some of them. Poor Ellie Meyer, she squeaked.
I take it you didn't squeak.
Oh, no. I was very pear-shaped.
You'll grow out of it, dear.
Oh, stop it, Mother. This is very important.
I'm sorry, dear.
The final cast is going to be posted on Friday.
Oh, I thought you said you were it.
Oh, sure. Miss French said I was very good, but they go by the rules. It's narrowed down to three girls.
Well, then you don't know that you're Portia.
Oh, sure I do. Helen Torello's a freshman. They won't pick her. Margie played the lead in the Christmas play, so I'm the only one left. Oh, Mommy.
I'm sure you'll be a lovely Portia.
Mom, did you ever want to be an actress?
Oh, daily.
I'm serious. Do you have to be awfully beautiful to be an actress?
I'm told it helps.
Well, wouldn't there be a chance for, an ordinary-looking girl?
You mean a pear-shaped girl?
No kidding, really. I'm considering it vocationally.
Oh, well, it certainly is a vocation.
Do you think I should transfer?
From what to what?
To the High School of Performing Arts. You know, the special school for actresses and dancers and everything.
How about waiting till after The Merchant of Venice?
Mom, this is a turning point in my life. You know, you're just going along, and suddenly you're caught up, and you go round and round and round.
Sort of like a revolving door?
Well, there's no reason why I couldn't be an actress, is there? Seriously? Honestly? Huh?
No reason at all.
Such an important day, really. Mom, I feel so pivotal.
Like Washington at Valley Forge? Or Caesar crossing the Rubicon?
Oh, much more important than that. Like Lana Turner being discovered on a drugstore stool.
Emily floated away about 3 inches above the floor. And pretty soon I could hear the quality of mercy being strained through the bathroom door. I sat there and listened to the tick-tock, wondering whether the clock would strike 14 next. Emily was vibrating with excitement. Ben noticed it when he came home.
What happened to Emily? She went past me without seeing me.
She's on her way to the courtroom.
To where?
In Venice. She's Portia.
Portia?
Not the one who faces life, the Shakespeare one.
Did she say that?
It's the school play. Evidently, Emily has a stranglehold on the part.
Well, that's great. I once played Shylock in high school. I was a very tragic character.
I imagine you were. Quite pitiful.
Now, cut it out.
She's transferring to the High School of Performing Arts. After that, it's Discovery on a Drugstore Stool, Hollywood, and the world is hers.
Big thing, eh?
But very professional. She just burst in on me. I was just sitting here listening to the clock. Ben, do you remember when you could get terribly enthusiastic over anything? When things became excruciating?
Well, they were pretty painful down at the office today.
Oh, you know what I mean. We miss a great deal somehow because we adjust to reality. Things are grayer. You're not listening to me.
Sure I am. Things are grayer.
It's sort of a question of intensity. The things that happen are much more important than they used to be, but you don't feel them as intensely. It's as if there was a gauze veil between you and what was happening. You're afraid to just feel. Do you understand what I mean?
Of course I do, dear. Hey, what are we having for supper?
Emily left left the school the next morning looking very stark, her hair pulled back in a ponytail and no lipstick. I knew she was being very professionally theatrical, saving her glamour for the audience. I was left alone with Grandfather's clock. Somehow now it was a colder tick, a more ominous clock. It followed me around the house as I worked. I began to think that with every tick-tock, a second went by. Time became very thick in the house and very fast. Finally, I just sat staring at the clock. It seemed to be snapping at me now, gulping seconds, shredding the minutes and devouring them. And then it struck. It was a very mournful chime. It tolled. Steadily, inexorably, it marched along while the tick-tock swallowed the seconds. I could feel my heart pounding along with the ticking. Faster, faster. You're getting older. Older. You're getting older. I blew my nose and sniffed a Benzedrine inhaler and pretended I had a cold. That night, after the children were in bed, I sat with Ben and the clock.
Pretty close. 22 after.
Ben.
You know, I could keep my golf clubs in that case.
Ben, don't think about the clock.
I won't.
Let's go out.
When?
Tonight.
Why?
Oh, just to go out. It's a lovely night.
But it's cold out.
But it's lovely. It's much easier to feel things on a cold night. We haven't been out alone just walking for months.
No, we haven't. Say, where's last Sunday's Times magazine section? Ah.
Do you remember how we used to walk along the Hudson River at night? Ben, let's do that.
Liz, for one thing, that was in the summer, and for another, we lived on the west side then. Now we'd have to take a cross-town bus. What's an Aztec sundial in? 12 letters.
Ben, we don't seem to look at each other anymore. Not really. Ben, do you really see me?
Oh. Is that a new dress or something?
No, it's old. Very old.
Very pretty. C-Z-Y-G. Zygote.
Ben, darling, it's so late. It's so late.
Late? Don't let the clock throw you, Liz. It's really only 20 minutes past 10.
Mother, did the clock always have as loud a tick as this?
Does it seem loud, dear?
I remember when I was a little girl waiting for my birthday party to begin, I couldn't stand the minute hand crawling so slowly. The clock seemed just to be holding time down.
I remember you children used to tease to stay up on New Year's Eve to hear the clock strike 12.
But now it just seems to race on and on and on. Mother, do you think the face has a sneer on it? I mean, do you ever feel as if it's stealing from you?
Well, dear, that depends what you've got that's worth stealing.
Time, I suppose. Do you remember that picture of you when you were 18, the one with the hat?
Yes. Oh, that was a lovely hat. It came down, you know, sort of this way. Oh, I was very pretty in that hat.
But that's gone. That's what I mean, that there's nothing left of it. There's nothing left of you from then. Doesn't that bother you?
Well, I wouldn't say there was nothing left of me. As a matter of fact, there's much too much left of me.
Oh, I'm serious, Mother. I don't think you know what I mean.
Yes, I think I do. But there isn't much use in worrying about picture hats of years ago, is there? I enjoyed it then, and I even enjoy remembering about it.
But it isn't the same as having it.
Well, we don't have much choice, do we? Besides, I like the hat today. Oh, it has a lovely tone, doesn't it, dear?
Mother went off and left me alone again. Go ahead, tick. I don't care. You can't frighten me, loudmouth. I won't pay any attention to you. I don't even hear you. You're out of tune. You have a very flat chime. No sense of rhythm. I don't care. Go ahead. Strike 40. I dare you. I don't care. I don't care. Emily?
Hello.
How'd it go today, dear?
Okay, I guess.
The cast for the play was posted, wasn't it?
Uh-huh. Not Portia.
No?
Helen Torello.
I thought she was a freshman.
She is. She... Oh, Mommy. Mommy.
There, darling, there.
They never picked a freshman before, but she was a child actress or something on Broadway, so they picked her.
That doesn't seem fair, does it?
She's a professional child. I hate professional children.
Emily, Emily, darling. You couldn't help it.
I memorized the whole first act about the casket. Mommy, I wanted to do it so much.
I know, dear. Here, come on now.
It's the most terrible thing to ever happen.
I know.
I suppose it's just a childish play, but...
I know, dear.
I'll never get over it. I told all the kids I was going to be Portia. Now I'm just Nerissa.
Well, that's a good part, too, dear.
I'll have to live through all those rehearsals with that professional child playing Portia.
It won't be that bad after a while, dear.
I know. I know I'll get over it. I just wish I didn't feel things so much. I wish I was old enough so... Those things didn't matter.
You will be, darling. There. You hear that clock?
It's 8 minutes past again.
I remember once when that clock was on time. And I cried and cried when it struck.
You did?
Uh-huh. I had a date. One of my first dates. And he didn't come. I just sat there in a taffeta dress and listened to the clock chime the quarter hours. And still the boy didn't come.
Mommy, you must have felt awful.
I did. I was brokenhearted. I cried and cried, and the clock just kept on ticking. Mother tried to comfort me, but nothing would help.
What happened?
The boy came the next night. I had the dates mixed up.
Oh, Mommy. It didn't really happen that way, did it?
Oh, yes. I didn't remember that till just now.
Must be nice to be mature enough so you can see things in perspective.
Uh-huh. Or proportion. It is rather nice now that I think of it.
I still feel awful about Portia. It just doesn't seem fair. It's such a terrible thing to happen to me.
Oh, now, Emily, I think you're beginning to enjoy the tragedy a little.
Mother, I'm not.
It doesn't do any good to go on feeling sorry for yourself. It was a very serious disappointment. Now it's time to start thinking about how to play the part you do have the best way you can.
I suppose so.
And you will be good. I'm sure of that.
You are?
You were one of the three finalists, weren't you? And you only were beaten out by an experienced girl.
I never thought of it that way. Mommy, you're so mature.
Okay, Liz, let's go.
Huh?
I thought tonight was as good as any night.
For what?
It's just as cold as last night. We can take the car up and park it somewhere and then walk on Riverside Drive.
Oh, Ben, for goodness sake, it's freezing out and you're just getting over a cold.
But you said you wanted to feel things or something.
I can feel them well enough the way I am.
Now, wait a minute. Last night you made a big thing about taking a walk along the river. Now I suggest it and you look at me as if I'd gone crazy. We're going to walk along that miserable river if it's the last thing we do.
How romantic.
What's going on?
I've decided it's more comfortable with a gauze veil between me and what's happening.
Oh. Well, maybe I understand what you're talking about.
Don't worry about it, dear.
I won't. Darling, let's walk along the river anyway.
Do you really want to?
I'll get my muffler and wool socks.
And you can use the earmuffs Mother gave you for Christmas. Loudmouth. So what?
Ben and Liz Marriott will be back in a moment. In the meantime, let us extend an invitation on behalf of our stars, Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin, as well as the National Broadcasting Company, to all of you to drop by next week at this time for another half-hour observation and transcription of The Marriage, written by Ernest Canoy, with Denise Alexander heard as Emily and Evelyn Barton as Abby. To those of you who have been so generous in writing either to the network or to the stars to express your appreciation of The Marriage, Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin extend warm thanks. The Marriage is an NBC Radio Network production directed by Edward King. This is Bob Denton speaking.
Ben, I got Mother to swap clocks.
Oh, let's forget clocks, darling.
No, no. This one gives me a philosophical approach to life and middle age.
It does?
Yes, listen.
Monday night on NBC Radio means a parade of great musical entertainment. You'll enjoy hearing Gordon McRae when the Railroad Hour offers The Girl from Utah.
The Marriage, untuned to yesterday from the 17th of January, 1954 on NBC. And that does it for this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.